Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is the Techno Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen-live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Techno Gaze, the show where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. My name is Mark, and with me in the studio today is Michael. Hello, Michael.
Hi there, Mark.
You looked a little bit startled there.
I woke up suddenly and here I was.
You're snoozing in the corner.
Shh.
Oh, sorry.
Don't my secret. No, I'm not at work.
And also in the studio with me today, or with us today, is Donna again. Hello, Donna.
Hello, Mark. How you doing?
Second week running.
I know. I should stop soon. I'll make a habit of it.
We love having you in, though.
Oh, thanks.
Now, on today's show, we're running by the seat of our pants today. I just had to load up my document. We'll be kicking off with some developments in the online dating app space. A new app is on the scene called Tinder, and it's comparable to the likes of Grindr and Jacked. You may be familiar with Jacked or Scruff.
There's a very long list of them, isn't there?
There is a long list, but this is another one to add to the list. But the distinguishing thing about it is that it's a more geared for straight people. And it might well work. Who knows? So we'll talk a bit about that in a few moments. We've also got, maybe in about 10, 15 minutes or so, we've got Carly Davies from Computer Bank. She'll be joining us to talk about the not-for-profit operation of Computer Bank and how they deal with e-waste in a responsible manner. We'll also open up the discussion to a broader scale and what e-waste is at a global level, what it means for certain areas of the world. And of course, not to mention, we can't do a week without covering some of the tech news that has occurred over the past week, including a very interesting quote from the leader of the opposition party, talking about Malcolm Turnbull and his apparent ascension as to being an inventor of the internet.
Well, it's good that we've got local talent in Australia, isn't it?
Yes, that's one way of putting it. But let's carry on now. You may be familiar, of course, with apps like Grindr, Jacked, Scruff. Have you heard of those?
I've heard of Grindr, but I hadn't heard of Jacked or Scruffed before we started, you know.
We should compile a definitive list of social interaction applications.
Social
interaction applications. Is that the category that they called in the App Store, or is it just lifestyle? Social, yeah.
Because we had this discussion before the show. How can I introduce this topic? Being, you know, correctly representative of what we're actually talking about, right? Like, what are they? Social apps? I mean, it's a social
dating apps.
Dating?
Hookup apps.
Well, it could be hookup, but the point you made, Michael, is it...
Insta-sex apps.
Well, it's not always for...
Just add water.
Just add water. Or just add electrons, perhaps. I don't know.
Wi-Fis and 3Gs and stuff. Because the point should be made, right? these apps can be used however you wish. You don't necessarily have to hook up off from an app like Grindr or Jacked or
But what's the, you know, what's the etiquette, you know, if you use Grindr but really all you want to do is have coffee? Is that kind of against the kind of, you know, the way it's meant to go?
I don't think it is, but you'd probably be like a salmon swimming uphill. Upstream.
Uphill, outside of water, actually.
Yeah, you might find a lot of non-coffee drinkers.
Just looking for friendship, is that something? No, you see, it's an interesting line, is what people want out of these things sort of varies so much, right?
As someone who may be a little bit experienced in this particular matter, you see profiles that say, I'm not interested in hookups. You also question...
And then you giggle and laugh and move on to the next one.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you question actually the sincerity of that. They might be there for hookups, but they might actually not be willing to admit it on the profile that has their picture included as well and all that sort of thing. Anyway, the big thing about this week, though, is an app got a bit of... I'd call it advertising, but it was actually a write-up on Fairfax's sites this week. And it's an app called Tinder. Now, the reason why Tinder is a bit noteworthy is it's using the Facebook, your connections off Facebook, to try and determine who you might be interested in. So the first thing you do when you get this app is you enter in your Facebook credentials, your password and that sort of thing, and it works out who your friends are and works out who are those friends of friends are also signed up to the app.
Nearby as well?
Nearby, yep. So it's a lot of the same sort of concepts that are applied to the likes of Grindr and so forth, but it doesn't present them in a nice panel where you can just browse through one, you know, like 20, 30 at a time. It, in fact, presents them one at a time, and it's like a almost like that chat roulette site that used to be big, where you'd... be presented with a person that you have been randomly chosen
to chat with. And yes. They may be in various states of undress.
Or dress.
Yes.
So the idea then behind Tinder is what? A friend of a friend, therefore, is more likely to be somebody that I would get on with?
Well, yeah, and not only that, but it tries to match up your interests as well. So it will, you know, if I like... a particular topic on Facebook, like WikiLeaks, for example, it'll match me up with people that also like WikiLeaks. Okay.
So I think this part is one of the really interesting facets of this whole area of software, is where we're starting to use, you know, machine learning or smart, you know, artificial intelligences to start making matches. We've had it around for a long time of, oh, you like this movie, you might like these. And Netflix was famous for having that, you know, massive reward out to sort of improve their algorithm. So I wonder how much of that kind of thinking and technology is being deployed to match people. Like, okay, so you went out with these people and you rated these ones well and these ones badly, so perhaps you'd like more of these kinds of people. Well, but it's so much more, it's even more deeply subjective than how we feel about things like movies.
Because the way it presents, in particular, like I downloaded and tried Tinder myself, and the way it presents it is, you know, the things that I have in common with these people on their profiles. But I wonder what else it's doing behind the scenes to actually figure out maybe you'd be interested in this person. Like, for example, I list on there that I'm interested in men as my Facebook profile. So I would hope that would be part of the algorithm
as well.
So
does it have a sexual preference option?
Well, not the app itself. Ah. So it's purely working off the Facebook
Facebook status.
Details, yeah.
And when's Facebook going to jump in and say, hey, you know, this is my information. If you want it, you can pay me for it. Not to the end user, but to the Tinder app.
I think Facebook have been doing that for some time. They sell their data. That's why we can use Facebook for free, but you know they're making money off the information we give them.
So are they going to close Tinder down in terms of the stream and collating this information?
Good question.
Well, it would have to, like, you do actually sign up to Facebook and go through the usual process of allowing this app to access this information. So it's not as if they're sort of going through a back door or anything to get the information.
No.
It's using Facebook's published
standard
to do that.
I lost track at some point. Does Facebook have an other for gender, or is it still just binary? Because it was a big thing when Diaspora, which is an open source alternative, when they first sort of started up, they made a big deal of the fact that you could, they had a write-in field for gender. It wasn't just, you know, M or F. It was whatever you like.
Actually, I haven't tried myself recently.
And recently, the Australian passport form has basically allowed it to have a third option there. So, you can put...
Is it other?
I can't remember if it was other or... unspecified, or right. But there was basically a recognition that the binary just actually isn't the case for, you know, a good proportion of Australians, so they changed it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know. I have been presented, going back to Tinder, I have actually been presented with females on there as well. And I think that there's sort of this, while it's kind of been promoted as being, you know, a way to almost hook up, or not to hook up, but to meet new people, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, for a romantic relationship. It could actually just be for a friendship type.
Yeah.
You know, you may be interested in this person because, you know, they are a friend of a friend. Or the only downfall, the pitfall that I did notice, is that there's not many people in my friendship circle, in my Facebook friendship circle anyway, that have signed up to it. So I just end up being presented with a whole bunch of sort of almost random people that are located near me. Yeah. So it combines the Facebook information with your location to actually come up with who it may you may be interested in.
What's interesting is I think this is a maturation of the whole social dating, whatever you want to call it, landscape, in that it, you know, you have initially with the gay community a very, I guess, specific group that are interested in perhaps in one thing. Now it's moving to the broader population.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a counter to the, you know, it's a hookup site, Sean sent us an SMS and he said, you know, he's made quite a few good friends on these apps and they're not just purely there for hookup.
Yeah, and that's a very relevant point. I think apps like Grindr and so forth have, I mean, Grindr was really the the first of these location-based apps to come out, and it really proved that there was a business model that could work for providing this. I mean, they started off with being free, and I'm sure they lost a lot of money in the first year or two, but, you know, it's working for them now, and they're able to fulfill Apple's guidelines of, you know, profile, you know, checking profile pictures and all that sort of thing, and they do have a viable, or seemingly a viable, business model there, and so have the other apps. So it seems like it's sort of paved the way for it to then continue on to apps like this new one called Tinder.
Tinder. So tweet us at TechnoGaze, TechnoGaze, if you've got thoughts on apps for social interactions. You know, what ones are you using? What do you think of them?
Indeed.
Tweet us.
You can also text us as well.
You can text us.
In an old-fashioned kind of way. We do like Twitter followers, but, you know, if you want to text us as well, 0427JOY949. Tim, Queen of the Night, he's on Sunday evenings. He's made the point that he's met his current partner on there.
Yeah.
And I know of quite a few people who've met partners off the likes of Grindr. It might not just be a hookup site. Techno Gaze here on Joy 94.9. We're talking about we're gazing into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. We often talk about new gadgets and the consumption of gadgets, but we don't really talk about the other side of it, the disposal of gadgets. Now, I at home have a drawer full of old widgets and gadgets and
just
cables.
A drawer?
And just in case. Just in case, you know, I need that old cable, or I need, you
That's
know,
right.
whatever it is.
That's right.
And I have a room full.
Really?
Well, wow. Nearly, yeah.
It'd jealous. Be like a museum, wouldn't it?
Some parts of it are very museum-like, yes.
So the disposal of e-waste is a big topic, and we have talked about it before on TechnoGaze. We had a representative from Yarra City Council a few weeks ago to talk about their work in the space. Today we have Carly Davies from Computer Bank here. Hello, Carly. How are you?
Good, thanks. Yeah, great.
So Computer Bank obviously is an organisation, it's a not-for-profit organisation, right, that enables the recycling of e-waste.
Computers? Any electronic equipment? Yes.
Okay. And so how long has Computer Bank been in operation?
Nearly 15 years. We first started up in 1998.
Okay.
Basically to address the growing digital divide issue back then, because there was obviously no one really recycling computers for reuse purposes back then. So we started up.
Right. And so what sort of prompted, is it, was it purely from the basis of no one actually doing it already, or...?
No, also a lot of people, myself included, low income and not having enough money to buy a computer back then when they were quite expensive. I think you could pay up to $4,000 for a computer back then, so it was really out of the reach of many, many people. So I guess it was also to address that need. Also seeing that there were quite a lot of computers being outdated and replaced with newer models, so there was quite a lot of stuff out there to be reused and redistributed.
So, Kylie, we kind of came into this from the e-waste angle, but what you're raising is actual issues of more social justice, really, and addressing the digital divide. When we were kind of thinking about e-waste, we talked about this whole sort of life cycle, and that really the best thing is to extend the life of this equipment by having it be used for longer rather than discarded. So that's kind of a nice, bringing together, extending the life of this gear, this old tech stuff that people don't want, but also giving people an opportunity to connect. And I think Michael was saying earlier that really these days it's as much about connection as it is about computers,
yeah.
The hardware. So could you talk a bit about that sort of side of how you work at Computer Bank, addressing those kinds of issues?
We'd like to do more in terms of the connection type of issue. In fact, it's a whole other area where people can't afford access is the cost of internet access. For even things like mobile broadband, it's really expensive for a low-income person. And we still see this issue now. In fact, it was much worse when we first started, in that probably less than 50% of people would actually get an internet connection to go with their computer because the cost was just out of this world for them.
Do you think that the NBN is going to make that better or worse?
It would depend on the cost, but if it's anywhere like cable or ADSL costs, then again, a lot of people are going to miss out because of that. Unless people start sharing their internet with other people, like Wi-Fi,
right,
to be shared around the neighbourhood, to address some of the cost access issues that people have.
Could you describe for us a little bit of how it actually works at Computer Bank? So do people just drop stuff off, or do you collect it, and then what happens?
People can drop stuff off, and we will also collect equipment if people have, say, more than 20 items that meet our minimum guidelines. So there are computers that we determine to be reusable, and then some that are just too old and need to be recycled. So if a company has computers that are dual core, that's what we consider to be reusable and able to be repurposed or
so you have minimum requirements.
We have a minimum requirement, yeah. Same for screens as well. We have a minimum requirement for those. So CRTs, which still people have.
That's those old big television-style
monitors. Yes,
monitors.
The big chunky things. We charge fees for picking those up, and that fee would vary depending on the size of the screen. So you'd pay a lot more for a 21-inch as opposed to a 14-inch CRT.
So does that mean to say that, I mean, you've got sort of your ideal equipment that you would like to have dropped off, but do you also accept the older gear as well?
We accept the older gear as well, but we charge fees. So the fees will be different for people who would like a collection. It'll be obviously more expensive. And for those people that can drop it off, it's a lot cheaper if you do that. The fees cover dismantling, taking the equipment, because we can't process everything. So a CRT monitor, we can't process that. A Computer Bank, we need to take that to another service that will process the monitor for us.
Why can't you process monitors?
It's a bit dangerous to pull apart monitors.
Right.
You need to degas them and let out the gas. And if you don't do that correctly, then you could end up with an injured person on you, probably more than an injured person, but yeah, so there are safety reasons as to why, and we're not sort of set up in that way to do that. So we do take it to another place where it will be processed.
So in general terms, I mean, there's obviously a pricing structure that you have for, you know, older gear, but you also, you know, the newer stuff, you obviously recycle and provide and give as working equipment on, you know, onto new owners, essentially, right? Like, it's a...
Correct. Anything that is working, useful. Even some old stuff, there is some demand for some old stuff, so we may test it and make sure it's still working and in good condition, and then sell that to specific markets that are after old server equipment, old electronics. There's even collectors of Amigas and Commodores and Ataris and really old stuff like that. So we are aware of what is still valuable and what can be pulled apart.
And one of the other things that you do to extend the life of this gear is actually change the kind of software on it. As I understand it, you put open source software on older machines, which also increases its life.
Yes, correct. So a modern operating system, Windows 7, requires, ideally a dual-core processor, but minimum 2 gig of RAM. Mm. Some of the older computers, they probably can't even take 2 gig of RAM because they don't have enough slots, and we don't have memory sticks big enough to put into the two slots that might be there.
Mm.
Yeah.
So does that mean you use a operating system that... it can handle that sort of low memory footprint of the... I think it's... What is it? Ubuntu that you use on the...
Yes, yeah. We've been using Ubuntu for quite some time. Before that, we were using Debian, which Ubuntu is based on anyway.
Right.
And for a while, you were busy kind of building your own distribution based on Debian. Are you still tweaking Ubuntu beyond what sort of comes on the pure download?
Yes, we do heaps of work on the Ubuntu distro, including adding lots of different software to that to make it more useful and ready to go for your average mum and dad user who doesn't want to download the codecs and things like this. We also include additional software as well and configuration changes as well. So when you get Ubuntu off the live CD, it will be set to be American English. We change it to Australian English, so we don't get S's and Z's instead of S's. So we do a lot of localization stuff. We add languages, language support for the type of users we might get in. We get a lot of Burmese people, Arabic-speaking people at Computer Bank. So we include these languages on there.
Excellent segue there, because the next question I wanted to ask you about was, you know, the work in the community. I noticed on your website you do list a whole bunch of community organisations that you do provide computers to, and they, you know, they seem like you know, sort of you're a not-for-profit organisation yourself, providing for not-for-profit organisations sort of around Melbourne. Would that be?
Yes. Yeah. In the early days, Computer Bank, we had. I worked for the Dole Project, so we had a little bit of funding, and we were able to do computers for free to a lot of groups. In fact, a lot of the projects we did overseas in the early days were all done for free. Obviously, someone provided some funding for transportation costs, but Computer Bank provided computers and the work and everything for nothing. These days, we're very happy still working with community groups, individuals, but we do charge for computers now. Right. We don't have any funding. We're self-funded, so we need to sell computers at low cost to cover our costs in doing.
And so what the fee structure there is there any sort of method to the way that you determine the cost of the computers that you provide?
We use the market, basically the second-hand computer market. We have a look at that every 3 months and see what prices are for second-hand computers that we have available to redistribute, and we base it on that. For concession card holders, we do it at 50% off the market price, and we're now selling computers, only desktops, not laptops, though, to waged individuals and individuals without concession card at double the price.
Right.
So that's a big shift, because you used to not be able to just go into Computer Bank and buy a computer. You had to have a concession card. But now you're saying that anyone can come and buy a computer from Computer Bank.
A computer or an LCD screen, yep. We just have an overabundance of stuff that we just can't move because there isn't a lot of demand. There still is a little bit of demand, but it's not as much demand for desktop computers anymore.
Everybody wants a laptop.
Laptops and tablets, and the cost of those over the years is also, it's really low now, so people can afford to buy these things.
Interesting. And you said before that this is all done by volunteers. Do you have any? Where do people come from? How do people find you? And are you looking for volunteers?
We have volunteers. Yes, we're looking for volunteers. We do have a section on our website that talks about the kind of volunteers we're after. In terms of people finding us to buy computers, it probably is word of mouth. Agencies know a little bit about us. Sort of social service agencies will be aware of us. But we've got our website. We don't really actively advertise anywhere, unfortunately. Yeah.
So that website is www.computerbank.org.au, and they're located at 483 Victoria Street, West Melbourne. But you're not actually open to the public every day, are you?
Not every day, no. Again, it's probably to do with us being a volunteer organisation and not having enough resources to be open every single day. So it's Fridays and Saturdays only. We can make appointments for Wednesdays and Thursdays if people really can't make those times.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much, Kylie, for coming in and talking to us about Computer Bank. We're going to go to a break shortly, but if you're able to stay around and talk to us about sort of the e-waste issues in general, we'd love to have you if you're able to stay.
Yep, I can do that for a little while.
That'd be great. Thanks, Kylie.
Technogaze.
On Joy 94.9, this is Technogaze, where we talk tech and the consumption and disposal of technology is on topic today.
We're very much cradle to grave.
Yes, or cradle to cradle as one of the presentations that we've
yeah, cradle to cradle is really, it's actually a book written by a dude who used to work for or used to be involved with Greenpeace. But he was basically saying that we've spent a lot of time and energy worrying about what to do with waste, and what we're really failing to do is to or what he sort of was advocating is we really need to turn this around, and rather than thinking about this stuff as something, you know, a problem, we actually need to start thinking about it as an opportunity and changing our manufacturing processes so that we don't build toxic stuff to begin with. And his whole thing was waste equals food, that if you have any kind of byproduct from manufacturing, that it in itself should be an input to either
back
something else or
again.
Back into the process to begin with. And so that whole concept of cradle to cradle is, saying that, you know, we're really just looking at it all wrong.
Yeah. Yep. Now, the other, there's another we tweeted earlier, and if you're following us on the Twitters at Technogaze, we tweeted the video by, I'm going to get this name wrong, Privahini Bradu.
Privahini Bradu, yep.
She's a advocate of this, a very similar sort of concept of talking about it from the much bigger picture point of view, right?
She's advocating that we really look at it in a resource reclamation way. So cradle to cradle is saying let's not make bad stuff to begin with. But I think what Privahini is on about is saying, well, there is bad stuff out there, but we actually could be using it, that there's a kind of financial bottom line that's being missed here, that in a lot of e-waste there are valuable metals such as gold, palladium, platinum, and that to mine e-waste is actually going to produce more of those precious metals than mining ore. And I thought that was absolutely fascinating, and I hadn't really thought about that before.
So it's a concept of, you know, if you've got raw ore coming out of the ground, to extract the metals out of that would be a much more difficult process, particularly for like gold, where the amount of gold per kilogram or whatever it's measured in is, you know, a certain amount, whereas you've got all this e-waste going into landfill, and, you know, the silicon and all that sort of thing that's around it is, in a similar way, the dirt that's around the gold in traditional sense.
Exactly.
So is there a way of actually mining, to use the traditional term, that gold out of that e-waste?
I think that's what she's been looking into. But the other side of it is that with e-waste, a lot of, we feel like we're doing the right thing and recycling it, it's true that a lot of it gets shipped off to other parts of the world where it's then processed. And as Carly was talking about before, some of those processes are really quite dangerous and have really negative health impacts.
One of the key points I got out of the video was Praveeni's presentation was a particular city in China, Guiyu.
Carly, saying you had been aware of this for...
It's been Guiyu's been quite a popular place for a lot of the e-waste to end up. I think, is it classified as the world's most polluted place in the world?
I think short of Chernobyl in terms of total pollution, in fact. So it's a place that a lot of e-waste is actually sent.
So what is the kind of main pollutant there? What's the process that happens that's making that such a, you know?
I think that it's when they're reclaiming that the chemicals that they use to reclaim stuff, like, I think acids are involved in the recovery of gold.
Yeah.
And that's what I think they're mostly looking at, recovering gold, because of the value of it. Mm. So it's the acids that end up in rivers, streams and things like that, and
right.
also the smelting of that with open flames and fumes and stuff, and breathing in those fumes because there's not appropriate ventilation.
I'd recommend absolutely checking out Praveeni's YouTube clip, because it does talk right to that level of, you know, a woman using open flame methods to extract gold out of the waste, and, you know, really hitting home as to why that's, you know, what the problem with that is. I mean, they've actually measured, I think, 256 times the amount of lead in the typical person's bloodstream.
Wow, that's just horrible.
In that particular city, compared to just local surrounding cities, so it's a massive problem for them. And it really sort of drums home to me, I think, the you know, what this means for e-waste in general.
A lot of the pipe products from the processes, that the primitive process that they're using over there, also are unable to be dealt with. So your plastics and your lead glass and all of this will end up in rivers, streams, in landfills, just dumped by the side of the road from some of the pictures that you see.
Yeah.
So how is when you're recycling, as opposed to repurposing for reuse, when you recycle, how is what Computer Bank does different to, you know, that kind of horror show that, you know, we're sort of talking about in...
Computer Bank doesn't use any chemicals or anything like that. We just dismantle things and separate it into different components that we then on sale to a proper, well, Sims E-Recycling is who we deal with. Basically, we sell all our e-waste to them. And they process that to recover the precious metals from in their facility in Melbourne.
And that's done locally.
Wow. Yep.
I guess, and of course, they would have to adhere to local standards and processes that they need to, processes that would...
Something else that's happening locally now, which may mean that some e-waste is not ending up overseas, which would be a good thing, but not so good for local people, is that now we can buy these domestic systems for extracting gold from e-waste.
Right.
Which means, and this is using acids, which means that people in homes are able to get access to these units and use terrible chemicals and possibly be tipping them down the sink.
Ooh.
As well. So that's also happening now to recover gold. If you look on eBay, you can see people selling gold pin circuit board on eBay for gold recovery.
Right.
Wow, I had no idea that was happening. So it's kind of like the maker culture that we've had, sort of, you know, rep wraps and maker bots. We've now got the other side of, you know, bringing it home, bringing it local recycling. That's extraordinary.
Yeah, and whether it's being done safely is questionable.
Is the problem. Mm. Really interesting. So, you know, we've sort of talked about, you know, reusing and extending the life of a product is the best kind of way of preventing, you know, this kind of voracious consumerism around technology. But what about the growing move of like corporate responsibility stuff? I mean, like, you've now got companies like Apple running their own recycling projects, and they've shifted the production of their computers from being made out of plastic to being made out of, you know, aluminium, which is a much more recyclable product to begin with. Do you think that's sort of having an impact on, you know, the kinds of things that you guys are doing?
Not really, because we see quite a lot of apples at our place, actually. And it was the first time I'd heard of the Apple actually recycling and having product stewardship in Australia. I was unaware of that.
I think a lot of the push for that, particularly from a corporate point of view, has come down to regulation and governments intervening and putting in place, you know, the EU in particular recently have put in place a targets to ensure that they do. It's called sort of product stewardship, I think, is a reference that is often used. And even here in Australia, there's government legislation, the Product Stewardship Act of 2011.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know about that.
And it, you know, talks about giving all Australians reasonable access to e-waste collection services by December 2013, increasing of e-waste, diverting from landfill and those kind of things. But there's also a corporate component to that to ensure that the manufacturers are, and particularly from an overseas push as well, manufacturers need to actually have some sort of plan in place for their products to be recycled, which is, you know, obviously a good thing.
It's a good thing. Well, I mean, Apple and their recycling, you know, stuff, it's on their website, so of course it's kind of a little bit of corporate spin, but they're sort of saying that they're aiming to increase the amount of recycling they're doing, and they compare it against how many computers they sold 7 years ago. They talk about computers having a 7-year lifespan, and so the amount that they, in weight, that they recycle this year compared with what they sold in, you know, 7 years ago is the way that they're measuring their effectiveness of this. And I kind of wonder if, you know, with their move to aluminium, you know, based laptops, which is more recyclable, if that's kind of part, well, obviously it's part of their thinking that it's going to be easier to recycle them, and will they eventually, you know, actually start recycling their own computers into new computers, because that's not happening at the moment, which that's cradle to cradle approach.
Yeah, you mentioned their aluminium. It's great that it's a more recyclable product, but it doesn't mean that they're actually using recycled aluminium to create the product
and
in the first
place. And so it was one of the things, I was quite excited when Apple first did this. I thought, wow, that's great. And then I was completely just, you know, disappointed to see that they were using zero recycled aluminium. It was all pure new, which is the most, like, energy intensive, you know, product. But the recycled version is one of the least. So it's, you know, I think it's an interesting problem.
Yes, very interesting. We could talk for hours, I suspect, on the topic. Unfortunately, we don't have the time to. It is 1:45 right now. We are talking about technology here on TechnoGaze and ways to recycle technology in particular. But we do have to move on. There was some tech news that occurred during the week, so we'll get on to that in just a few moments. TechnoGaze. You're listening to TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9, and you may recognise this voice.
But there is one person who I particularly want to mention. We have a strong and credible broadband policy because the man who's devised it, the man who will implement it, virtually invented the internet in this country. Thank you so much, Malcolm Turnbull.
What?
Come on, say it. Spit it out.
What?
You had your hands in your face there. Your face in your hands before there, Donna. Why? What's so odd about that?
I'm sorry. I'm just speechless. Malcolm Turnbull invented the internet. What is this? Is this Tony Abbott thinking that he's, you know, like Bush or something, that Al Gore invented the internet?
It does hark back to that, doesn't it?
Come on.
I wonder if he knew exactly what he was saying, as in Tony Abbott. Did he know that he was saying something that people are just going to ridicule and make fun of?
He can't be that stupid. And surely he was. Was he making a joke?
And
people
he wouldn't have written it himself. He would have had minders write it for him.
For the context, so this was a speech that was made to the Liberal Party room, I think it was yesterday, and it was you know, sort of a pep talk of sorts, and he was describing his team that's around him and how that's how they.
So Malcolm Turnbull did run or owned an ISP and an internet service provider called Aussie Mail.
Yes,
and it was one of the big first kind of large Australian service providers, but I don't think he even founded it. I think he bought it.
Yes, no, he put money into injected money into it back in the very early 90s, I believe, $500,000 worth.
So does that constitute inventing the internet?
Well, quite a lot of people are saying he didn't really invent it. He just knew a good
deal when he saw it.
Deal when he saw it. So
I think he sold it for something like $57 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're kind of rubbishing this a bit, but I mean, to be fair, one of the things I've liked about Malcolm Turnbull's engagement in this space is that he did run an ISP. He does know something about it, which is more than can be said for a lot of our politicians when it comes to technological things.
That is true.
To use that, though, in sort of a response to what I would consider, dismantling of a great program being the NBN is perhaps not the best way to
NBN Lite.
Use the talent.
The saccharine version of the NBN, which, is not going to be as fast. But we're going to get it sooner and it will cost less, apparently, but it just actually won't do the job.
Yeah, 25 megabits is all they want out of it.
Yes. No, I want more. Give me more. People are talking about 100 and I want gigabit.
I don't think we need the NBN. We don't need the NBN. We don't need the coalition support.
Right.
Because in South Korea, they've just launched a new wireless network, an LTE advanced network, that gives you the speed of, drum roll, 150 meg.
Right.
No, gigabyte.
Gigabyte. No.
Wait, what?
No, 150 meg.
Not good enough. Won't do.
Wait till 2015, go to Japan, and you're going to get 1 gig.
Over wireless?
Over wireless, LTE advanced.
So look, this
the
is...
The physical problem, though, everyone, and this has been part of the coalition's point, is that wireless technology is going to develop and give us speeds that is much more feasible to roll out by way of, you don't actually have to have physical cable in the ground to do it. So that's what they're sort of saying is the fundamental flaw of the NBN is that, why not make the most of technologies that are yet to be developed?
But that whole line of argument has been well and truly refuted. We're going to need fibre to carry the load. Mm. Sure, we're going to be using mobile devices, to get around for the convenience. But what we're going to see is fibre is going to be the backhaul. Fibre is going to carry the vast quantity of traffic. I mean, I'm sure you've been at a game or at a conference or something where you've got a lot of people. Wireless just gets maxed out really quickly whenever you've got quantity.
It's all about density.
Right.
And you might be able to support 1 gig with one person on it, but you're not going to be able to support 1 gig with 100 or 1,000 people on the same access point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is why, that was tongue-in-cheek. Proper broadband, fibre is what we need.
Yesterday.
Hopefully they can roll it out quicker instead of having to deal with asbestos.
Thinking back to what we were saying earlier, though, is, can we afford it? Are we going to be able to afford it?
Yes.
And the question is, can we afford not to?
Well, that's a big question, yes.
Mm. This is TechnoGaze here. We're talking tech news now. And
this is our news roulette segment, isn't
news
it?
News roulette, where we spin the wheel.
We throw a dart.
there's a dartboard up on the thing, and choose a...
duck.
I was wondering why I heard something go past my ear just now. So which one's next? Hey, Google Reader. It's dying.
And it's going to be buried on Monday.
Yes, Monday is the D-Day for Google Reader, much to the dismay of a large number of geeks, myself included. I used Google Reader quite heavily to keep up with all of my news sources, not just going to individual websites, and it's a bit of a pity that they're doing that.
However?
Facebook.
Yes.
Facebook are coming to the rescue, apparently. Of all companies.
Well, Facebook just want to keep you sticky, right? They just want you to stay in the Facebook pretty garden.
Indeed. So they've seen an opportunity to work on its own reader for mobile devices only. They must love the mobile platform, those people at Facebook. I wonder why.
Oh, well.
Because it's in everyone's hand
and
all
right
the time.
And it keeps you very, very sticky on the way to work, on the train, lunch breaks, other breaks.
But no date on a release yet. Is it going to come out in time to save us, to rescue us from Google's abandonment? detriment of our feed, you know, habits. No, although there's a few other things around, though, that people are talking about. Like, I think there's something called Feedly that people have been talking about using.
There's a few alternatives sort of popping up purely because Google Reader's dying. So, you know, yay for consumerism and for, you know, supply and demand and all those wonderful things. Any other new... Where'd the dart just land then?
The dart landed on the aeroplane.
Oh, yes, hooray, hooray. I saw this like last week, actually, that the FAA are actually considering letting us use our digital devices during takeoff and landing.
So FAA?
Except for phone calls. The Federal Aviation
Authority
Association.
Now, this is the US one, right?
That's the US one, but, you know, they lead. So it's because of them that we can't, you know, have knitting on planes and things like that anymore. But,
a friend of mine is going away and had to research this. You can actually take knitting needles and crochet needles on planes.
But immediately after 9/11, you weren't allowed to have knitting needles. Yeah. They did bring... I don't knit,
did you?
But I used to use knitting needles to keep my hair up, and I actually had them confiscated at one point, which was most annoying. But yeah, there's a whole lot of things, but we do follow the FAA's lead when it comes to these kinds of things, so it's a big thing. For those of you who have Kindles, who've had to turn it off during
so
takeoff,
annoying.
So, you know, those kinds of things, but we're still not going to be able to make phone calls.
No, and this is going to happen probably around September. They're going to come up with the new regulations, so that will be good.
Who wants to make phone calls? That's what I want to know. Like, if someone's making phone calls on a plane, those old credit card. I mean, I'm sort of glad that they haven't really taken off.
Too expensive.
Yeah, but the phone call thing is purely economic because most of the airlines are putting in these Pico receivers on their airlines and on their planes, so you'll be able to make phone calls at sky high rates.
I've been on planes in the internet. I've been on airplanes
on the
in America, which allowed me to use the internet during. Yes. And I was kind of like at first incredibly excited, like hooray! But then it's like, no, this is the last.
This is the last
quiet, silent place where no one can get to me.
I did a database update in the air once. Great commit. Oh, it worked.
Did it work?
It worked. It worked.
It's
fantastic.
Amazing, isn't it?
And $35 a megabyte. It worked.
Yeah, there's your digital divide.
Yeah, that's right. Next story. What are we going to do? Apple cables, iOS 7.
Ah, yes. So the Lightning cable, the format of the cable is restricts you from being able to reverse engineer it. There's a chip involved.
There's a microchip.
It authenticates essentially the cable is saying, yes, I'm a Lightning cable and an Apple approved one.
One of our great open source heroes, Benjamin Mako Hill, talks about anti-features when companies add features which actually reduce your ability to use them freely for what you like. And this is an absolute classic anti-feature.
Yep. So the authentication has been cracked and they're now offering cables at cheaper rate or looking at trying to work out how to
But in the future it's going to be harder and harder to use non-authentic cables in your devices.
Indeed. This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. We're just about out of time. Unfortunately, the hour goes so quickly. Talking about interesting topics.
Big stuff. Big issues.
Yes, that's all we have time for. If you missed any part of the show or perhaps you're looking to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by browsing to joy.org.au/technogaze. Coming up next is a Joy News Bulletin with Matt Thompson, followed by Cravings. Pete is in the chair this afternoon. Now, thank you for joining me, Donna, today.
Lovely. Pleasure to be here, as always.
Indeed. And thank you, Michael, for pushing buttons and doing a great job at it.
Can I cut you off again?
Please don't. Have a good weekend, and we'll catch you next week.
TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.